We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome to episode number 22 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson. And we are delighted to have you here to journey with us as we understand deeply another fierce female and inspirational leader. This leader is coming all the way from Canada, and we're really excited to have this international flavor in our podcast today. So let's learn a little bit more about Jennifer. Jennifer has recently completed an 8-year term as the Director of Education for the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board in Ontario, Canada, serving a diverse population of over 73,000 students across 150 elementary and secondary schools. She is a former superintendent of curriculum, something I love, and so do you, Keisha. And she's been an elementary school principal and a French teacher. Jennifer earned her doctorate in educational administration from the University of Toronto in Canada. And Jennifer served as the chair of the Informational Advisory Group for the OECD. She's currently on the executive committee for Karanga, the Global Alliance for Social Emotional Learning Skills and Life Skills. She's also the chair of the Board of Governors at the University of Ottawa. She is a busy woman. And she is the editor-in-chief for a group that I love working with, the Knowledge Check Signature Leadership Series. Jennifer is founder and CEO of Educating Leaders, a consulting company specializing in education, future skills, and senior leadership and talent development.
Oh, man, I love your bio, Jen. It's so, so incredible. And so impressive that you've done work with OECD. That's one of my favorite organizations to utilize research from. So we are incredibly lucky to have Jen as one of our sheroes in education. And Jen, each week we explore models of leadership together. We focus on what we refer to as a pattern of M, asking our guests who their mentors are and how they've impacted your life, and then considering the mirror and role models. And then we're going to see if there are any movements that you're watching that inspire or ignite maverick moments. I always get tongue twisted when I give the spiel on the M's.
And Keisha, don't forget, we also want to catch any edge of babble. I use some and then you reiterated it. And we want to make sure our listening community is really connecting with what's being said. So Jen, I'm wondering if you can help us understand, what is OECD? What is this organization about that both Keisha and I love?
The OECD is, first of all, Keisha and Frances, it's great to be here with you. And you've done such great sessions with other sheroes, and excited to be part of your network. The OECD is a global organization, economic advancement, et cetera. And there's a branch that specializes in education. And I think many educators and non-educators would actually know OECD from the PISA testing, the international assessments that take place every third year, for 15-year-olds in the areas of science, mathematics, and reading. And you'll also often see international results that will come out that will rank the different countries and how their 15-year-olds have done in that area. So that's probably, the general public would probably know OECD from the PISA assessments.
Well, thanks for that very clear explanation of what that organization represents. I have followed their work for decades, and I just really appreciate what they have contributed to the field and what they continue to contribute. So I'm super glad to know that you've been part of that work.
Keisha, just a little bit more on that, actually, how I got engaged with them. The PISA results obviously look at academic skills. And the OECD decided to go in addition to that, into a different area, which was social-emotional skills. And I was brought into that project about 5 years ago when the manager and lead on that project started kind of thinking about that. And basically, fast forward to right now, that study, the results are being released this year by the OECD. And it's 10 countries from around the world, and Ottawa, Canada. It's actually 10 cities from around the world, and Ottawa, Canada participated. And that's how I became the informal chair of that particular study. But you're right, Keisha, they do incredible work, and it really helps all of us around the world think about, you know, what are the next things happening in education, and that's all of our responsibility and joy.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially as flat as the world is becoming, right? And I feel like COVID accelerated the flat, right? It just like, now we're literally all pretty much at, you know, equal opportunity. Now we're ready to get started with our M's, my little tongue twisters. Can you share with us who your role models are and why?
You know, when I was early in education and early getting into administration, I had the privilege of working for an incredibly talented woman. And, you know, I'm late 50s now. And so this woman was about 15 years older than I was. I was very young getting into administration. And Marilyn Guthrie is her name. She was director of education or chief superintendent in the district that I was in Northwestern Ontario. And she had this incredible ability to be able to go forward and say, you can be a great educator, you can be a great administrator, and you don't have to walk away from being a good mom. And I was having children a little bit later on. I was, you know, having my first child at 36 years old. At the time, that was considered to be relatively old. And hearing that come from someone that I really respected, I thought, okay, I don't have to make a choice. And I have shared that story with many young administrators. When I became the chief superintendent in Ottawa Public Schools, I often, when we had orientation sessions for teachers and educators that were considering going down the path of administration, that was always the first thing I said to them. I said, I'm going to tell you the exact same thing that I was told by my mentor. You don't have to walk away from being a good mom or a good dad to be an excellent educator and an excellent administrator. She was a role model to me, and she is till this day.
A powerful role model around balance, something that we all struggle with, but definitely those who take on incredible leadership positions and the leadership in their family as a mom, and balancing all of those powerful intentions and mindsets and ways of supporting both personally and professionally. And as you think about those role models, you've also been blessed to continue that pathway with some amazing, amazing mentors. So who are some of your current mentors and how are they influencing you?
So my current mentors, what's really exciting about it is that they're beyond the role of the sector of education. Of course, you know, growing up in education and most of my career in publicly funded education, most of my mentors were in that area. And since leaving the school district, I'm now consulting and getting into private sector, et cetera. And the two of the models that I'd like to give a shout out to are two, the president and the CEO with the company that I'm working with called Knowledge Hook. It's a Canadian digital math company. And what I love about these two mentors, Travis is the CEO and Kumar is the president. Travis is bringing me along on a journey on ed tech and the whole technology world, which, you know, many of my colleagues would have thought it was hilarious that I was actually entering into the ed tech world because that wasn't my background. And Kumar, on the other hand, is bringing me into the business world. And what I find amazing, both of them are, you know, late 30s, that age group. They are so welcoming to me and to others and bringing us into their world. And they're incredibly generous with their time, their explanations, and they also value what I bring to the table. And, you know, when you circle back and you think in general, what, you know, who makes a good mentor and what are the characteristics of a good mentor? A good mentor is someone who shares and who welcomes others into their world, and that they're also willing to value what the mentee is bringing. And it's that continuing learning cycle. That's what makes the mentor-mentee relationship so interesting and so enjoyable.
Oh, it's so true. And I'm super glad that you're entering into the EdTech arena. That's one that I've been in for decades. And I love to see crossovers like Frances, when she kept saying, you know, I don't know anything about tech. I'm like, you have led the second largest district in the universe. You know about tech. You just don't know you know about tech. And I'm pretty sure that's how you are too. You've used it, you've directed it, you've incorporated it into your curriculum strategy. So I love it when, you know, when you cross over and get into the true tech lane.
And you know what, Keisha, with that, what I've learned after, you know, reflecting over the last, you know, year or so, as I merge more into that world, we're doing a better job now across technology and education than we were before. When I look back, when I used to walk through classrooms in my schools, it would drive me crazy when I saw kids doing technology and they were either sitting at labs or sitting at their desks and the teacher was at the back of the room. And what I realized is, from the education standpoint, we didn't do a good job of describing the kinds of interactions that we wanted having in the classroom. So typically when we were, as education, we would turn to our technology partners and we'd say, digitize this, what we're doing already. Well, we weren't taking near advantage to the incredible minds that they're thinking way beyond what we can possibly do. And on the other hand, we had ed tech people that were coming in and developing things without talking to educators. And they were actually promoting practices that pedagogically weren't sound. And someone like me and someone like Frances in our education systems were saying, no, we don't want that being used because that's not good pedagogy. And I think that's something that I've really appreciated in the last little while, is that ed and tech are truly now coming together to be ed tech. And we're thinking of technologies that really face the teacher and build teacher's capacity, as opposed to trying to shortcut and go straight to the students. So those are just some of my reflections as I move forward. And that's where it's going to be golden. That's where we hit that magic spot where student learning is accelerating. Scalability of building teacher capacity is accelerating thanks to that true partnership between education specialists and technology specialists.
Mm-hmm. So true. It's tech and learning.
Absolutely.
Ta-da! You're welcome, audience. You're welcome. small applause. Well, okay, here's our next M. When did you look in the mirror and see a leader looking back?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, I'm not sure if I recognized it as a leader when I looked in the mirror. I just knew I had a job that had to be done. I come from a big family. There were six kids. We were spread across many age groups. I was kind of in one of the older age groups. And so there were all these younger kids. And, you know, my mother just expected us to be taking leadership roles. I literally think it started then. It moved on, you know, when I went into high school and part-time jobs, and people were saying, oh, okay, well, you can, you know, be the assistant manager of X. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting, right? Young kid being kind of an assistant manager to older employees that had more experience. But, you know, you get an opportunity to try things out. And even at that very early stage, you realize this is all about relationships. Leadership is about, yes, of course, you have to have some cognitive ability and you have to have some skills that you build. But boy, oh boy, it's about relationships. And so, you know, that's kind of where it started. And, you know, the same thing happened when I got into teaching. I loved teaching. I loved being in the classroom. But pretty soon there were kind of opportunities. And those opportunities, it's really about curiosity. If you're curious, you want to jump and try some of those opportunities. And that's kind of how it started as far as my career path.
Well, we're pleased you became curious and continue to do so. You know, you mark the importance of relationships. I remember when this pandemic started, I was drawn to some of Margaret Wheatley's work in systems thinking. And it said the way to prepare for the future is to attend to the quality of your relationships. And so true in the past, present, and in our future. And as we think about the future, you keep hearing the future is female. And part of the reason Keisha Ray and I started this podcast is we really wanted to tell these amazing stories or create a platform where amazing women can share their stories and mentor others. And so I'm curious, what are some ways that you see women changing the world?
Well, I think those are great points, Frances. And I think, you know, we've only just become, and in different sectors, it looks different. But, you know, I'm drawn back to a professional learning session I took years ago when we were thinking about brain science. And there was this doctor that came in and actually showed how the brain develops in utero. And they described how in a baby boy, the one hemisphere fills up and develops first, and then the other hemisphere starts to develop. In girls, those hemispheres develop at the same time. And, you know, when you look at, and I know it's, you know, not appropriate to be stereotypical, but there are different ways of processing information, of thinking and learning and leading that females have. And I think it's just so important to have that mix. You have wonderful male leaders, you have wonderful female leaders. We just have to make sure that we have a place for both of those and to be profiting from those multiple perspectives and ways of leading. And I think we've only just begun. I'm seeing all sorts of incredible female leaders in education and leading school districts, leading ed tech companies. It's amazing.
Oh, you're so right. And I'm going to have to get my hands on that study. I feel like I can use it in a variety of ways, including deep conversations with my husband on certain issues. Oh, my goodness. You know, there's a lot of female mavericks, too, disrupting and disturbing the system in all fields. Who might you be watching and encourage others to watch?
I have been privileged to come into a really interesting network of people and that are working in the area of social emotional learning. And this network is, you know, there are many, many women involved. And I'll think just a couple off the top of my head. Joanne McKechnie, who leads the Learner First, and she is out of New Zealand. And she's doing incredible work on the idea of contributive learning. And the idea that, you know, kids and adults, et cetera, we learn for a reason to be able to give back and to contribute. I think that's fascinating. Barbara Hotzfeld, who is the vice president of Microsoft Education, she's doing fascinating work. And her team are really trying to look at how can Microsoft Education really be thinking about what does learning and living look like in the future. She's another person. Another person, Catherine Millett with ETS, Education Testing Services out of Princeton. And she, what I find really interesting with ETS is that, you know, they're known for very quantitative type standardized testing instruments. And they're a group that is really pushing on this idea of social emotional learning and the connection to college entrance and technology. And, you know, those three, I think, off the top of my head, it's a combination of education, technology, business, scalability, different ways of thinking, and really thinking about learning, teaching and learning from a whole new way. And, yeah, great women doing work in that area.
It goes back in a beautiful way, connecting to your earlier comments around EdTech and really having that holonomous experience, right?
Absolutely.
And seeing that in that SEL space.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, it's not going to happen in our classrooms unless the people that are coming into it, we're branching out of our original sectors and we're connecting with people that see things from a different perspective. They have a different network. They have a different set of skills. And it's that combined interaction where you're getting magic happening.
Yeah, that magic is powerful from the classroom to also the space that we've seen, especially amplified in this environment, to the adult learner when it comes to SEL.
Absolutely.
We focus so much on the classroom. Now we're really seeing the importance of that for the adult learner and our community. And I'm curious, you mentioned contributive learning, so maybe taking some of the learning that you've had and carrying it forward for our listeners. How do you take care of yourself? What are your self-care practices? What might we learn from Jen Adams today about that space?
Well, I'll circle right back. Actually, when I was the superintendent in Ottawa, the board of trustees, the elected officials, there was a change within the legislation in Ontario that said that school districts were now responsible not only for learning, but well-being. And, you know, although intuitively, I think most educators always knew there was a foundational piece about well-being, it wasn't nearly the framework wasn't nearly as well defined and purposeful as it was in the learning area naturally. So in the district, we took the approach, we're going to go right out. This is a decade ago now. We're going to be early adopters to this. We're going to create a framework that's kind of parallel with our learning. And we went out and started talking about that. And we developed something that was called the exit outcomes for our students. What are the skills and characteristics? It was a big community involvement. And we came up with five characteristics and five skills that we want every student to be walking out the door with. And it was really funny when we started talking about this in the school district, it was the teachers and the principals that came back to us and said, if we're going to be focusing on helping our students have a good sense of well-being, we have to do that as adults ourselves. And if academic skills are not the only skills that are important for students, we have to think about our own social emotional learning skills. So it was interesting where that came from. Going to your question where you say, so that piece of learning and well-being being a double helix is a fundamental part of where I am. And if that's going to be a double helix in my thinking as far as advising education systems globally, I have to make sure that I'm doing that personally for myself. So how do I do it? And again, it goes back to a conversation that I had, you know, at some of these orientation sessions. Is I would say if you're trying to get balance as a parent and as a professional, think of some of the things as a parent that are so near and dear to your heart that you will build your professional life around that. And the one thing that I gave as an example, I like to cook and I liked my kids. I grew up with a mom that didn't work outside of the home. And so family meals were really important to me. And so that's the non-negotiable that I put into place when I became the superintendent. I went home every night and cooked something. Sometimes it was pretty quick, but before I was coming back to a board meeting or, you know, community meetings or anything, they knew that I was going to be leaving. I was going for an hour and a half and I was doing that. And so that's my best example of what is really important to you as a parent. Is it reading your child's a book to your child before they go to bed? Is it dropping them off at their daycare and you doing it as opposed to someone else? Mm-hmm. Think of something that's really important to you to make you feel like a good parent and put that into place as a non-negotiable in your professional life. And then vice versa. What as a professional do you think is so important that you're going to make sure that you capture that? And I can think of all sorts of examples, you know, your ability to be able to interact with people and make people feel that you're connecting with them and value them. So, you know, a couple of non-negotiables on the parent side and a couple of non-negotiables on the professional side, and then a couple for you. My non-negotiable for me is that I have to be doing some exercise. And it's not because I feel like I need to do it. I just like to do it. And so, you know, it looks different now. I'm able to do it more often because I'm consulting as opposed to in the job that I was before. But outside doing something physical, that's my non-negotiable for me personally.
Oh my goodness, I'm taking so many notes. I can't wait for my reflection in this dialogue.
Keisha, it's a classic example. It has to be doable, right?
Yeah.
It's like people that make, New Year's resolutions. And it just ends up being another great big rock on their shoulders. It has to be something that you love, that's important to you, and that it's doable. And it can't be too broad. It has to be something that's concise that you can say, yeah, I just want to do this and I love doing it and it makes me a happy person and a happy adult.
And it sounds like your expectations of when you do it, like you said, sometimes you came in and cooked a quick dinner, not an elaborate dinner, but that's okay. You still met your expectations. I'm really bad at setting elaborate expectations. And then I feel like I'm a failure, you know, over and again, because I never meet them.
Yeah, absolutely. So that, you know, that when I say go home for dinner, what I meant was that I wanted them to see me. I wanted my two children to see me. And sometimes it meant that, you know, they were doing their homework at the counter while I was getting something ready and I was leaving it and I was running out the door. And the same thing with the exercise piece for my personal well-being. You know, when I was working in the job that I was before, sometimes it was, you know, just on Saturdays and Sundays when I'd be out cross-country skiing or downhill skiing. I'm from Canada. It's cold. you know, going out for a run, going out for a walk or whatever. now that I've got more time, that is expanded. And I can do that, you know, almost every day. I can go out for a walk for 30 minutes. I can do those things. But, you know, you have to be able to adapt those expectations to the current context. And yeah, makes you a happy person, right?
Now we're going to get moved to a little game of insights that we play to kind of finish off the podcast. And it's a finish this thought game. Okay. So here's the first one. An event that changed my worldview.
Yeah, it sounds kind of cliche, but I would say it's, you know, just the most recent is the pandemic. And I think what it's changed, you talked about it, Keisha, early on, you know, that the world is flat. This is something that has affected every sector, every country, every socioeconomic group, every racial group. We are truly all in this together. And it's impacted my thinking and that whole idea that, yeah, we've got to be better at collaborating to come up with solutions to help people.
So true, so true. And I have one of those sentence starters too. And this one, I know you have a lot of strengths. So this is going to be a fun one. I became a stronger person after.
Yeah, I think I became a stronger person after I became a school leader and a district leader. And, you know, one of the things that I think all of us that get into those types of roles, you have to have thick skin. We interact with people that have very strong opinions, and some of their experiences haven't been the best. And it doesn't matter whether it's a parent, you know, dealing with, you know, their own child and, you know, struggles that are happening in school, or at the district level dealing with communities that have not had the best experience with education. And I think two things that I had to develop. First of all is the idea that you have to remember that these people want the best for kids. And that's the same thing that we want. When that parent comes and is angry with what's happened, it's because they're worried about their child. And so how do we bring that together and say, yep, you know what, we're coming at it from this, from different angles, but we both want the best for your child. And the same thing with the community groups. Community groups have had, some of them have had terrible experiences with education. And the reason why they're angry is because they're reflecting on that and they want better for their children. And so, you know, I think I became a better leader when I was forced into those situations and seeing things from a different perspective. And trying to get to a point where you're welcoming people and trying to work for solutions. So I think that was a point in time.
Oh, wow. That's cool. That I think anytime we get an opportunity to advance, we take it with hesitation and gratification. You're like, I want to do it, but how is it going to change my entire life?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a great, it's the opportunity and the questioning, right? It's this is overwhelming, but this is an amazing opportunity. And, you know, when we're thinking of mentoring others and providing opportunities for others, we have to remember that that's their state of mind as well. They're excited, but they're a little bit apprehensive. What are the implications for my life, my family's life, work situation, et cetera. So trying to be cognizant of that, I think, is important.
Every time. Okay, what about this one? My life improved when I...
My life improved when I just decided that I would jump into opportunities. And, you know, it's just... I don't know whether I formally made that decision in my mind, but I just realized that there are so many opportunities. And whether it was personal or professional... Just being curious and being willing to say, well, I don't have to make this decision forever, but I'm sure going to investigate this and try it on. And I can honestly say, you know, looking back in my career, there was never a role that I didn't love when I started it and when I finished it. And I was going on to a new role, not because I was disenfranchised or bored with the role that I was currently in. It's because another really cool opportunity came along. And I think that openness to trying new things is what has made a difference for me. And I try to encourage others to do that.
You know, every guest that we've spoken to has said there's like this little moment that they remember a decision that changed their life. What kind of decision changed your life?
Decision to be a parent. I was later becoming a parent. 36 is a little bit later. That made a huge difference. Decision to do my doctorate. Frances, you have an amazing graduate school, and you know that opens up whole new networks of people and networks of thinking, and gives new opportunities professionally. And you know, I think a decision to go to Ottawa, which is a community that's highly diverse. Obviously, we're the nation's capital. We have children and families coming in from all over the world. 22% of our population speaks something other than English or French at home. And it's a really diversified group. When you walk into any one of our classrooms, you know, you may have, you know, language speakers from 10 different language groups. And across the school, you might have 50 or 60 different language groups. It's incredible. And so that decision to come to Ottawa in 2005 opened up a whole new world into different communities and different immigration patterns and connections globally that have inspired me, and happy to raise my children in a community that's that diverse.
So in many ways, a constellation of moments that are all connected and have really created a beautiful picture for you that lights up and illuminates in so many different ways.
Absolutely.
You know, we have learned so much about you as an incredible human being, as a nurturer, as a change agent, and also as an incredible friend. And so your international and poignant point of view, especially around those non-negotiables, I'm sure Keisha will be picking up on that, have highlighted a dialogue for us that will continue to keep our thinking going. And, you know, I always put a little... I put Keisha on the spot a little bit. I always want to make sure I check for understanding and make sure she's been listening and is really pulling these stories into her own life. So Keisha, I got to ask you, in the presence of Jen here, what have you learned from this conversation?
Well, I'm going to have to confess I've had to take a lot of notes. I've had a few disruptions thanks to my puppies working from home. So much fun. But my first, I want to say that your journey has been incredible, and it has influenced so many areas. And I absolutely love it that you took the work that you did in your early career and kind of applied it to really stretch yourself in different areas, including SEL and ed tech. So everything that you know, kind of learned and probably even developed in your early career, you were able to apply it and enrich it now. And I think that is what everyone dreams they could do, but seldom do we get that opportunity. I love what you said about magic and kind of making the magic happen when all the synergies kind of line up. And, you know, I love what you said about your personal, professional, and personal you, personal family, and professional non-negotiables. And I think that it is, you know, it's one thing to say we have them. It's another thing to hold to them. And, you know, I think a lot of us in our minds think that we have them, but then, you know, sometimes we're willing to compromise. You know, I can think of a time that I left my stepson at a Sonic while he was at school. And I told him, I'm like, just walk to the Sonic. The board meeting will be over soon. 3 hours later, he's like, you are a terrible person. And I'm like, I am. I know. And I had to send my secretary to pick him up. It was terrible. And if you've been a superintendent, you know that story because you've lived it. And you think, and what comes into your head at that time is, why did I become a parent, right? Not why did I become a superintendent, which is crazy mad. So I love it that you balance that and you prioritize family. And that's why I had my kid, you know, another kid late in life, so I could like get a redo button and do a lot better job.
Keisha, when I had moments like that, I would joke with, you know, some of my colleagues, like, I guess I'm getting the Parent of the Year award again.
Mom of the Year.
Another proud moment as a parent here.
Exactly. Mom of the Year. We're having McDonald's 5 nights in a row. Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. We're winning the prize here.
Winning the prize. We do need to give a prize out for people who have just managed, you know what I'm saying, who just made it over the finish line of raising their kids. Lord. And then I love that you have used, you use the word curious and inquisitive many, many times during our conversation. And I really appreciate that you didn't run from that curiosity or that inquisition, that you ran toward it. And you're like, oh, I wonder. And you just went toward it instead of, oh, I'm going to leave that over there. And I think that that is what built the fabulous career that you have had and that you're continuing to have, is just your curiosity for things. And you just move into that direction. I think that is priceless. And I hope our listeners heard how you described that you did that, because I think we would all be probably more fulfilled people if we leaned into our curiosities instead of ran away from them or, got afraid and thought, well, I can't do that, you know.
I think there's two things, Keisha, that I've learned from that is that, first of all, you don't, you know, when you're looking at a new opportunity, it doesn't have to be forever. You can just try it out and see if you like it. So, you know, that idea that, you know, once you look at it or investigate, you're not locked into something. And the second thing is that there are so many good people out there to help you get better and to help you succeed in that new opportunity. And that's something that I'm loving as I get into the ed tech world. There are amazing people in the ed tech world, and it's opened up a whole new network of people that are really excited about that kind of collaboration. What's the best in pedagogical practice? How do we make sure that we scale that? How do we put that into make sure there's equity of access for students and for teachers? And so, yeah, there's lots of good people. As you push yourself to go into a new area, there's awesome people out there that are trying to help us succeed. And you build new friendships and relationships as you do that. And Frances is a perfect example.
She's perfect anyway.
I think so. And I don't, you know, it hasn't, we've only had a relationship for a relatively short period of time, but I can tell she's perfect.
Perfectly imperfect, as Carol Jago would tell me. Well, gosh, Keisha and Jen, I give you an A++ on your learning, reflection, and sharing. And I love, again, just how curious you've made us. They would refer to that in the coaching world as marker language. It's so important for you. And as we think about that and what our listeners are experiencing and learning and reflecting on, I'm curious, Jen, are there some final thoughts you want to leave us with as you think about, you know, maybe something you would tell your 12-year-old self looking back?
Yeah, you know, I think looking back, you look at who you were when you were 12 years old and just, I think I'd say go for it. I intuitively kind of did that, but I think looking back, I'd say, yeah, go for it. It's a great world out there. There's amazing people and lots of things that fun things to be doing and things that the world needs to have. And so I'd be saying go for it. And the other thing, just a quick reflection, is so appreciative, Frances and Keisha, of there are more and more opportunities. You guys are creating great opportunities for young leaders, for leaders that are experienced, for females, for different groups to be able to access and to think about, you know, where do they want to go? How can they have a fulfilling life? And just really thankful that you're doing the work that you're doing. It's great.
Thank you, Jen. And we're going to go for it. This group of fierce females will continue mentoring one another in this digital space and also in this space with younger mentees as we come out of this pandemic. And to help us continue with our thinking, you know, Keisha, I always come up with one of those coaching questions. You know, I love me a good coaching question. So as we help ourselves get better and succeed, as you said, Jen, here's our question that brings it all together for us. How might you be a mentor that shares, welcomes, and contributes to a continual cycle of contributive learning with your non-negotiables? Again, how might you be a mentor that shares, welcomes, and contributes to a continual cycle of contributive learning with your non-negotiables?
I think our listeners will have some great, great responses on that one, my friend, especially after they hear all the tips and tricks that Jen offered to us. And we can't thank you enough for joining us today and spending a little bit of time with us sharing your incredible journey and your Inquisitive Curiosity.
So fun being part of it, and look forward to collaborations in the future.
Oh, absolutely. You can bet on it. Now, please join everybody. Please join us for our next podcast, where we're going to highlight another Shiro in education and explore their M's. I'm getting tongue twisted at the beginning and the end of our podcast. That's super fun. Please don't forget to follow our hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's ROLE, and respond to the coaching question that Frances just shared. Until then,
be fierce
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Frances Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at #TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor ROLE.